commentator on the contemporary scene. Here's Gene. Listen, before we get started here, Shepard has a prediction to make, if you don't mind. You know, there's nothing like the ego of a predictor. I'll tell you, a prognosticator is only, well, I'd say he's second in ego to an oracle. It's very hard, you know, to make these value judgments. But Shepard is about to make a prediction. Would you please get my scary music up there in there, Jim, for it? Just hold it there. I'll give you the cue. Hold it there just a minute, and I will need... a little echo chamber on this. Because what is a prognostication? Well, it's a prediction of things to come. Right. That makes sense. And if there's any business in the world that is more... Oh, not yet, Jim. Please. Please. You don't want to alarm the old ladies out there. Please. They're having trouble hearing those little voices in their head anyway. Now, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you this, that there's no business outside of possibly the music racket that is more herd-oriented and trend-conscious than the movie business. Well, you remember what happened the minute the Poseidon Adventure came on. You had movies of buildings blowing up. You had movies of earthquakes where the entire state of California was swallowed up by a giant tidal wave. The catastrophe movies. And they have disappeared now almost. We've gone through that. After all, it's just so many catastrophes, you know. Till ultimately you wind up with one called The End of the Earth. And they tried that one at Warner Brothers, but there were certain technical problems which... they couldn't quite work out. So, and out of that, that's very offensive. See, a lot of people would be really bugged because a lot of people say, well, it's okay if Russia gets blown up and goes, and Cuba and all that. But my God, well, you're not going to do this to Morristown, New Jersey. I mean, after all, bad guys, good guys, and all the rest of that. So the end of the earth should be selective. Do you agree? Shouldn't be just everybody, after all. That would really be a negative thinking. We don't believe in negative thinking anymore, do we? Right. After Dr. Norman Vincent Peale straightened us all out on that one. That's right. Ever upwards and onwards. With a cliche on your lips. Go higher and higher. But I don't want to get into that. I would like to say before I get... Have you noticed that this is very confusing tonight, Jim? Or is it just you? It doesn't matter. It's a, you know, who cares whether it's the third or the fourth Marx brother that's a cuckoo bird. It's together they make this. But nevertheless, I am making prediction. There is no business at all like the movie business for following trends. Please bring me the spooky music and a little echo chamber. And now another picture that must be seen from Warner Brothers International. Once in a generation, a movie is produced that says it for all time and for all men, an exciting adventure tale that grips the imagination. Not recommended for children under 9. It was a quiet Sunday afternoon off Portland, Rhode Island, when all of a sudden, the scourge hit, the killer eel.
275-foot eel, weighing over 14 tons, appeared off the coast of Rhode Island, devouring all in its wake. And only three men stood between civilization and the killer eel. Steve McQueen, Gene Hackman, and Jack Lemmon playing Dr. Quiverman, the eminent marine biologist. Guest star Suzanne Pleshette. You must see the killer eel.
And then I can just see, you know, this conference going on. See, down at the 20th Century Fox Eagle International Productions. One guy says, "All right, now, Sam, I'm not going to take any more of this stuff. Now, damn it, I told you by Monday. We got to have a monster devouring animal movie, or we're going to see a lot of house cleaning around here. All right, now, Marv, you come in here with this idea of the killer ants. Killer ants. The Japanese, them guys over there in Tokyo, they turned out the killer scorpions years ago, and what did that pay? That made about $20 in the drive-ins. We got to have something big that swims. All right, now, let's hear some suggestions here. And don't just try to butter me up because I am Mr. Big around here, and my name is on the water cooler out there. It's on the chimney out there, too. You know where the incinerator says? Cloverman Productions. Right. So don't try to butter me up for that. All right, now, okay, let's have some suggestions. How about you, Sam? Man, not bad, not bad. I don't think the people are going to buy the idea of a man-eating clam. I know clams are popular, and a lot of people like to dip them into that red stuff, but I'm telling you, a man-eating clam don't sing. It's got to sing. Sing. All right, now, anybody else here? Lobster? No. Man-eating lobster. That's ridiculous. Now, come on, stop it. You're kidding me, Herb. A moray eel? What's that? Oh, not a bad idea. A 700-foot moray eel. Hey, how about this one? How about an electric moray eel? So big. Oh, I can see the ad campaign now. An eel so big. An electric eel, so enormous that the power from this eel could provide the electricity for the entire city of Buffalo, New York, for over 2 weeks, air conditions and all. Speaking of, if I may get back to the predictions of things to come, you know, speaking of our exciting life of today, I was reading in a sociological a quarterly the other day that America is suffering from a very interesting new malady. It's called the service syndrome. Yes, write that down, please. That'll appear in the exam at the end of the semester. It's the service syndrome, spelled service. Yes, there is a hum back there. That's my head. My head hums usually at this time of day. Yeah, hear it? I've been hearing that for years. Well, I see, I'm a total electronic man. You must understand that. I generate square waves in my spare time. Oh, you got a rotten monitor in there. You're getting what we call a sinal distortion there, which means that you're distorting the sine wave, which I'm putting on. I'm putting on a pure sine wave. However, I don't like to burden you with these technical problems that we electronic media people have. Have you ever suspected that all of us in showbiz really are different from all of you? We are. Every one of us has things in us that you don't even have. A doctor has to check. We don't go to a doctor, most of us. We go to a serviceman. And, they check your overload relays and all that stuff. And that's called a media man. And, yes, have to get your FET circuits checked once in a while. And, a few little ICs have to be repaired. You get that cracked plastic and stuff. But, nevertheless, I would like to say... That the service syndrome, what does the service syndrome mean? Well, it comes because of television, they say. See, we're always talking about what does television do to people because of violence, but they're not talking about what does television do in a more subtle way. It makes you demand things of life that life is not prepared to give. In other words, you see all those great gas station guys on television. You ever seen a nicer bunch of guys? They're really nice guys. They'll bounce a tire one up and say, hey, now you see that car over there? That belongs to Mrs. Clevenger. She's the math teacher. Now she's been coming in here for years now. She don't know nothing about tires, but she sure knows her math. Now look at what she's done to this tire. I ask her, wonder if she had them balanced. She says, well, they look round to me. Well, I'll tell you this. I know how she drives. I figure what kind of tire she wants. And when she comes in here, a lot of people have been looking for years for that gas station guy and not finding him. So they begin to suspect then that they are inadequate, that other people are finding that gas station guy. Now, how about those nice family scenes that you see on TV? You know, where everybody's sitting around eating Franco-American SpaghettiOs, and everybody's so damned happy about it. Have you seen the nice little family scene where the guy's getting the hamburger that's mixed up with the hamburger helper or something? He never says, oh, no, not again, what are you doing? No. He says to that cute little wife of his, how are we going to eat tomorrow? And she says, gracias, senor. gracias. Kamala, he says, and then they dance a little Mexican hirachi or something there, and it's so nice, and people just don't get that at home. You agree? Now, one of the most significant commercials, I think, that way, is the Curious commercial. I've been trying to figure out what it means for a long time. You know the one where the guy sits down, and everybody says, in one commercial, it comes in, there's different guys play it all. There's about five different versions of it, where the guy comes in, he sits down, and he says, hey, isn't there any fresh squeezed orange juice for old dad? And with that, his wife says a very mysterious thing. She says, no, you prefer the number one frozen orange juice. And he says, well, she says, but now we found something that's every bit as good as the number one. She makes the thing with the hand. And apparently everybody's got fresh orange juice but old dad there. And it's not because, and what's worse, old dad doesn't even get the one he wants, which is the number one frozen orange juice. He's got the one that they're selling, which is even better than the number one. And I can't figure out what it's all about. Why did they pass old dad up in that when they made the orange juice that morning? Apparently everybody else was drinking fresh orange juice, right? And it's old dad prefers the number one, the frozen one, but he doesn't even get that. It's a mysterious world in those TV commercials. Now you see what old dad, now here's why people get the service syndrome. How does old dad react to that? He turns to this little kid and says, oh, how about some frozen bird's eye for your old dad? And then he turns back and he says, yes, it's more like fresh squeeze. And he does with the hand. He always does this thing with the hand. Instead of the way dad would react. Dad said, now come on, for God's sake, don't tell me I'm the only one that's not getting fresh today. What the hell is this? Well, I'm going to squeeze some myself. That's what he would do in real life, wouldn't he? But who wants real life? How about that one where the guy comes and apparently he's installing a washing machine. And he and this lady suddenly start playing beanbag with this box of powdered oil. He says, I call it the out cleaner. And he throws it to her and he presses a button, does hot, warm, cold. And then she throws it back to him. That's a nice little scene there. I had the feeling that something was happening between that lady and that serviceman, that just after that little game of catch began to really get exciting. We missed it. So that's called a service syndrome. You watch a policewoman, right? Have you noticed not only how unbelievably chic that policewoman is? She must have a wardrobe that, you know, just doesn't stop. She didn't get that Magnificent Alexander's on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, that lady is dressed, as they, as they say in bad novels, to the nines. But that, nevertheless, she's so concerned about the people. She doesn't say, all right, buddy, up against the wall, you're busted. She never says that. No way. And how about Dr. Welby? How long has it been since you've had a doctor call your home after you have seen him? Says, I'm checking on your cold sores. Now, I'm going to drop by tonight on my way back from the office, and I'm going to check on your cold sores. And by the way, I want to have a good long talk with your aunt. You see, I believe it is, well, I don't want to say it over the phone, but I believe that she is giving you psychological problems which are causing your cold sores. And, of course, then there's a whole adventure with you and your aunt, the cold sores. Oh, yes, you know, you can get psychological cold sores. And now, I'm just curious. I'm just curious how many people feel cheated in life because their teacher, for example, isn't like Lucas Tanner. You know, and all they got is Mr. Schaefer, see? Little Mr. Schaefer, 4 feet nine, 270 pounds. He's as bald as a bowling ball. And he stands up there, and he talks with a very strong lisp, and nobody can hear him past the second row. And more than that, he gets very angry anytime anybody asks him a question. And he never wants to discuss your sex life or your identity crisis after school. And I take television now. I think in many ways has made people even tired of their friends. Yes, really, seriously. Now, this is something that nobody even discusses, but if you watch, for example, Archie Bunker, have you ever noticed the unbelievably funny friends that come in? Everybody's got great lines. Everybody is a lovable, cuddly character. And, you know, you could sit in any given the family circle in America for weeks and not hear a funny line. And, you know, you get damn sick and tired of having your husband around if he comes downstairs and he doesn't say something funny after watching Archie. And this is supposed to be, you know, great family, realistic family. There we are, supposed to be realistic. And have you seen that nice clean limb bunch that ride around on emergency? Gee, did you ever see a greater looking bunch of firemen? And their equipment just gleams. And they come out of a firehouse that looks like, you know, it looks like the most luxurious Howard Johnson that you can ever imagine. And, you know, they're all great-looking guys. There isn't one fat one in the lot. And they always, you know, they always show them having dinner, and they're sitting around, and one of them is doing the cooking today, Tony, and they have this funny scene about Tony's cooking the Italian food, you know, and all that. And they're all very jovial characters. But you notice one thing about them? There isn't one guy in there that's bald or fat or that sweats. And there's a firehouse right across from my apartment where there isn't a guy in that entire firehouse that weighs less than 285 pounds. And I keep, you know, wanting to open the window and holler, hey, you guys, when are you going to straighten up and start saying funny things? Well, you know, all they do is stand around on the street, you know, and look at girls as they go by. Have you noticed that they never do that in television? And no fireman ever says, "Hey, baby," you know. Yet I saw 25 firemen the other day fighting a fire, and this girl walked past, and the whole thing stopped. The hoses stopped squirting and everything. And, oh, man. See, so the service syndrome is basically a dissatisfaction with real life as opposed to the life that you see on television and the internal demand that you have for greater services at all times. In fact, there's one TV commercial, for example, where this lady's suddenly there with the frozen fried chicken, and she brings it out. And she tells the other lady, well, of course, you realize, thank God for frozen drumsticks. Thank God, or whatever it is. I'm just inventing this name. Thank God. Now at last we don't have to fry our chicken. You know, you have to fry them, each individual piece, a different way, because each piece is thicker and heavier than the other pieces. And I never saw anybody fry chicken like that. They just thrown it all in the pan. I never saw. But that's another TV problem. Have you noticed how nicely those drains clear on television? Have you tried any of that stuff? Naturally for you, Jim, it always works. That's right. I'm glad to hear that. But, you know, on TV, you just go, and you see this, wow, that great drawing, you know, with that glass drain. Isn't that nice, you know? It doesn't blow it back out the top like it often does in real life. You know, the guy puts the stuff in, boom, up it goes to the ceiling. Either that or just lays there for 4 weeks and doesn't do anything. Finally, you get a coat hanger, you know. Straighten it out. Stick it down there. And, you know, that's the greatest drain cleaner of them all. Do you agree, Jim? Absolutely. That's real life. It's like, have you noticed another one is the dissatisfaction with the pen. Every pen that's advertised, I'm talking about felt-tip pens and stuff on TV, they really write. Do you know that in my hands, the lifespan of your average felt-tip pen is 3.5 words? 3.5, and I'm talking about no words over 6 letters long. It runs out of gas. And then you stick it on your tongue, you know, try to get some more, and you try it again. That's that felt-tip pen. Forget it. Or do you have the same thing? No, not you, Jim. You haven't yet. Well, writing is something. Yeah, you use the ballpoints. All right. How long do you get on a ballpoint? You rarely use it? All right. You just throw it away. Yeah, that's right. When it stops. Well, then you must have a trail of used ballpoints behind you. I know some guys who buy it by the, you know, dozen lots. But they never mention any of this on television. No way. Now take, for example, soft drinks. To actually look at the sight of a person drinking a diet soft drink on television, the ecstatic look. There's one scene where this girl, it says, be good to yourself. It says, go on, what the hell? You only live once. The announcer says, be good to yourself. And shows this girl, she's opening up a bottle of diet soft drink. I thought they were first coming on with a spot, you know, for wild turkey bourbon or something. What the hell? You know, you only live once. Hang one on tonight. You know, something like that. But no, it's a spot for diet soft drink. Now, you know, in most people's lives, when you switch to diet soft drink, that means, well, you know, that's not being good to yourself. That's saying, well, I'm going to have to cut out all that great stuff. From now on, it's going to have to drink this colored water with fizzy stuff in it. That's what I'm going to drink. Well, here she is, and she opens this bottle, and she settles back, and she takes a drink of it, and it's just unbelievably ecstatic. I wonder how many people feel that they didn't get the right bottle of this stuff, or their guy is making fake stuff. How about those unbelievable spots for iced tea? You know, where the guys fall over backward in the swimming pool. Oh, God, iced tea. Well, iced tea has always been one of the more, to me, one of the duller drinks available. Well, you know, I'm putting it down. But on the other hand, I'm not going to walk a mile for a glass of iced tea. I mean, you know, if it's there, I mean, I'll enjoy it. But the iced tea has never made me say, oh, my God, it's unbelievable. Oh, God, bring some more. You know, I'll drink it, you know. I put it generally in the category with the Kool-Aid, some stuff my mother made that she called Orangeade, you know, that kind of stuff. It's all right, you know, but, you know, it's like Jell-O. I've never seen a Jell-O riot, you know, where people are rioting because the Jell-O is so exciting and so good that they can't stand it. But on television, this is the way it goes. The life that you see on television has made you dissatisfied with yours. Now you watch, for example, even the news can do it. In a subtle way. You watch, for example, Walter Cronkite every night, year after year, or John Chancellor. Every night, these people are very concerned with the way the world is going. Now, every human being has moments when he thinks about this, and a lot of times when he only worries about his golf swing, or he couldn't care less. How about yourself? Now, seriously, during a week, how many hours do you think that you're really interested, say, in the plight of the Vietnamese? Well, no, just I'll be honest. Are you ever? Well, see, Walter Cronkite's different from both of you. He is every night. And you begin to wonder, what's the matter with you? You may be an intelligent person, but you're just not measuring up anymore.
And then you talk to your friends. How long has it been since your friends have actually discussed, let's say, America's involvement in the Middle East? I mean, I don't mean yelling about the cost of oil. I mean, that's not discussing it. I'm saying they discussed America's involvement. Now, have you ever felt inferior to polls? Well, have you ever read polls where it says 27.9% of the population agree with Henry Kissinger's attitude towards Western Germany? And 74.9% of them disagree with Henry Kissinger's attitude toward Western Germany. And then it says 3% no opinion. Have you had that suspicion that you're always in? Do you or don't you? Has anyone ever asked you about any of this stuff? I have never once been polled. Would you like to poll me on anything? Call me up, friends. No, I'm very serious. I really honestly think that media, and this may sound very light and loose to you, but I do believe that all the bombardment of media, of thousands of people who apparently have very, very clean-cut opinions on all the most complex issues, has made a lot of people very dissatisfied with themselves. Now, I don't think this has ever really been discussed much in media. I mean, sure, I'm ignoring the whole idea of what violence on television or the various media do to people. But have you noticed that even the most humdrum lives in movies and in television shows are somehow magically exciting? Sure, I mean, let's take a guy that's the desk sergeant in the Rookies. Have you noticed how great his uniform looks? Have you noticed that he's always got a funny remark to make to one of the rookies when they come in? Yeah, he never says, "What, huh? What'd you say?" He never says anything like that. He never says, "Get off my back, will you? Can't you see I'm up on my thing here and work? Now, come on, you guys." No way. He's got a funny remark and he leaves. Have you noticed the lieutenant is always kindly yet stern in the Rookies? So I'm saying that everybody has a specific role. Johnny Carson now will sit down every night. Johnny Carson has these fantastically funny friends that always appear. Each one's made a movie recently. Somebody's made a film. Somebody's made a record. Another guy's playing Las Vegas. He never says, "And now tonight's guest is Charlie Applerod, who works down at the Shell station, down at the corner of Sunset and 17th. Charlie, come on in. Give him a big hand, folks. Charlie." No way. But that's what most of us, you know, when I say us, it's editorially live with. That's a fascinating problem. It is. Have you noticed what fun it is on television to go to McDonald's? Have you noticed how they sing at Burger King? And you go there, you know, there's a bunch of truck drivers standing in line, you know. And so you always feel vaguely like nothing quite comes up to your expectations. You hear about a movie, you know, and you can hardly wait to see it. I mean, Pauline Kael writes 19 pages in the New Yorker on it. It's a milestone. You got to see it. Judith Crist, you know, comes right out and cries right on a page there for you. It's unbelievable. You got to see it in halfway through the second reel. You've forgotten what it's about. That's known as the shampoo syndrome. So, would you please, do they get something out of it you don't get? Well, yes. Well, free preview, trip out to the coast to visit Warren Beatty. a lot of stuff you don't get out of it, Fred. But, as you row your little tiny boat down Route 22, always searching for the next Howard Johnson and hoping that this one will have 28 flavors, be careful of the boat. It's got a leak in it. You've got to keep your eye once in a while on the floorboards there, and that water that's oozing up around your ankle bones, it's coming up around everybody's ankle bones. Have you ever... Have you ever had the suspicion that Gene Hackman is in everything? And if he ain't in it, Dustin Hoffman is in it. Sometimes they're both in it.
You've been listening to Gene Shepherd, author, raconteur, and commentator on the contemporary scene.